Hello, hello, you guys, and welcome back to Tell Me Why You Are Special. You guys already know what this is. You know what we do here. No warm up, no soft landing. It's straight for the truth because the truth is the only thing that changes anything. And today I have someone in the hot seat who I know the moment I learned about her work in this conversation was going to be different. And like having her sitting in here already, her energy is tangible. So I'm so excited. She does not traffic in comfort, okay? She does not help you feel better about staying stuck. She helps you confront the things that you have been walking past every single day, pretending like you don't see. She works with leaders, with women. She drives across the country literally to sit across from people and ask them the questions that they haven't asked themselves. And somewhere in all of that, she developed a philosophy that I think is going to hit a lot of people listening today right in the chest. Okay. She's going to tell you the rest. Mylena Sutton, welcome to Tell Me Why You're Special.
Indeed. Thank you for allowing me to come on your show. I thought it would be fun. I must admit, I was a little intimidated by the, hey, no soft landings.
Oh,
I'm like, how is this gonna go?
you are so safe though. It kind of sounds abrasive, and I get that, but no, you're totally safe. I usually take my guests through their first little. The first question is usually kind of the elevator pitch, like right now, who are you? What do you do? And why should anyone who's perfectly fine or that thinks they're fine, why should they care about this show today?
Indeed. So Mylena, I live in the Northeast. I'm in New Jersey. I run two small businesses, literally two different vehicles for really the same work. One is called Voltage Vista, where I work with leaders and teams. The other is Pink Boxes Club, where I work with individuals. The premise of both is the same. What are your compelling goals, and how do we work on eliminating the contradictions and the habits that keep you from getting there? That's pretty much it, whether we're doing it with the group or just you. And the reason being, I think that it's important. So many people live lives where they don't actually set compelling goals. Many people live their lives where they're really focused on routine and they never think about what matters to them. And so when I'm working with an individual, I want you to own the thing that you may not feel safe saying out loud. Look, if this is who you are and what you want to do, embrace that, and we will figure out how to navigate the people and the relationships in your life that make you feel as if there's something wrong or selfish when you choose to follow what it is that you do.
Girl, you lit a fire and I'm already obsessed. So I feel like, we're going to church today in the business sense. You call yourself the leadership fanatic. So my question is, where does that fanaticism actually come from? Because obsession at that level is usually deeply personal. So what happened in your life that made leadership not just a career, but like this is a conviction?
And it is a conviction. And for me, I define leadership truly in this most simplest way as align everything, and to work on the contradictions in your life. And what got me to this place when I turned 40, I went to Jamaica, I partied with my cousins, we had a really good time. And then when I came home, I wrote my obituary. I cried over my life for 3 days. I mean, and when I say I cried over my life, I was traumatized. And here's why. I felt like I had spent a lot of time doing the things that I was supposed to do. In short, I often say, I feel like in hindsight, I looked at my life and I'm going, I'm responsible. I do all of these things, but I'm taking a prescription that was written for somebody else. I'm just checking the boxes. But if I died today, I would feel like I had not lived. And in that process of writing my obituary, I came to see death as the loss of opportunity, not just about the body, but anything that's unfinished is just that, unfinished. And then I happened to read a book by Daniel Pink. It was called Regret. And I can't remember how many people were in this study, but it was about 15,000 people. And they talked to people who were in hospice or dying. And these people didn't talk about their failures as the thing they regretted. They talked about the things that they did not try, the hopes that they had that they didn't even attempt. And I was like, I'd be damned if I'm going to live the rest of my life this way. So with that being said, I went on this inward journey to really just do that. I wanted to stop having the same internal fights with myself, that same kind of personal war. And I also wanted to stop that tug of war in my life in terms of my relationships. I mean, just to give you an example, I never had a great relationship with my dad. I grew up with my grandparents. And as I wrote the obituary and as I thought about it, I decided in that process that I would stop trying to make that relationship be something it didn't have the capacity to be. And when he died, I was like, no, I'm not coming to the funeral. I'm not going before he died. Why? Because if I were to maintain integrity, we weren't close before now. I would only be showing up now because I feel like I'm supposed to. Why not let the people who truly love him grieve and keep me out of it so that I'm not there dealing with the fact that I'm pretending? And I started to live my entire life that way. If it's up, as Cardi B says, if it's up, then it's up, then it's up. And on the flip side, it is what it is when it's not. And that was really kind of my midlife pivot. I am going to live an authentic life, and I'm not going to apologize for who I am.
I think, I mean, that is that's an incredible story. One thing, I love the obituary thing. I actually had a life coach that took me through that process. Where did you get the idea? And the second thing, I think people don't understand, like, everyone's tired. Everyone's tired, and they don't understand it's because they're pretending. They're tired because they are living such a fake life. So what was that shift for you in just your energy and what you could and couldn't carry anymore because your capacity is free? You're just yourself, unapologetically. You don't have to carry the weight of who I have to pre that is the most freeing moment that I think it's huge.
It absolutely is. To be honest, I don't know where I got the specific idea to write the obituary, but I journal a lot. For me, that's part of my personal growth process, just what I do in terms of personal maintenance. But I think it's the pretending part. As a matter of fact, literally last night I wrote a new page to go on my website where literally it talked about the code switch, the pretending. And so much of what I do with people is kind of what I said earlier. Let's own who we really are. It is exhausting to tap dance all the time for other people. And the reason it's exhausting is because we try to make it seem like it doesn't cost us anything. It's the same thing that I tell women when they are being these altruistic people. They're setting themselves on fire to keep other people warm and they want to give it this energy like, no sweat, no big deal. I'm like, no, it's not that you want to rub things in people's faces, but people shouldn't think that your love is free. When I choose you, I am choosing to do things for you, and therefore the opportunity cost is I'm sacrificing what I could be doing some other sort of way. And I think what happens with people is that we've bought into this idea that to be honest about what it takes to show up in life for yourself and for others is not cheap, nor is it free. And I think once we start to embrace that, I can love you and still be concerned about myself. As a matter of fact, my favorite senior relative, she's 95. I was sharing with her that I volunteered to drive chemo patients to doctor's appointments. And she said, I think that's really admirable, but make sure you're taking care of yourself because you are the best resource, the best asset you've got. And if you aren't well, you can't show up for anybody else. So keep helping, but make sure you're taking care of you. And you would go, these people have cancer. She's like, I heard what you said. But at the end of the day, you need to make sure you take care of you. And I think so often we don't embrace messages like that.
Especially as women, right? Because
Oh,
we're kind of,
especially women.
we have that like ingrained on us. Like you have to do everything, be everything, hold it together. You come last, mom is always last. And nothing has shifted more in my life than when I actually put myself first, right? You take care of yourself and your cup starts to fill up so you could take care of other people. It's very basic, but people still miss.
One of the biggest fights I've ever had was with my mom on that very issue. So, as I mentioned before, I grew up with my grandparents because my mom was a teen mom. So, my mom had gotten into this habit of calling me to talk about all of the work with respect to showing up for my siblings. And one day I said to her, you don't really have children. All of us are adults. You are doing all of these things for them, and you are complaining to no end. First and foremost, change the terms of agreement. Hey, I'm no longer doing this. I'm not doing this. We are all grown. We should be able to figure it out. I was like, you're setting yourself on fire. And for a lot of women, particularly women of color, because it's about God is gonna bless me. Well, not if you're pissed off while you do it. I mean, what's the point? Maybe you put it on pause, and when you feel better about it, you can renegotiate that deal with God. But ultimately, being honest about this self-sacrifice oftentimes isn't even something that they enjoy doing. It's become a routine. It's become a pattern. And you can stop that. It might seem difficult at first, but you can stop.
Yeah. And there's healing in that because a lot of it is from people pleasing and a lot of it is from guilt, a lot is from shame, and a lot is just trying to basically run away from yourself. The more you're helping other people, you never have to turn
Yes.
inward. You
Yes.
never have to figure it out. And so when I see those women that are out there like killing themselves for their family, I'm like, man, she's really running from some demons right there. Like she is not slowing down, not stopping.
My therapist, this was years ago, said something to me that I've held on to. She said, "You can feel bad, you can feel guilt, and do nothing."
Exactly, girl.
And she talked about learning how to sit with conflicting emotions. You do not have the wherewithal to save everybody and everything. You can do your best. And what if you just held on to this idea, I can feel for you and still not feel like I have to turn my own life upside down? I don't always have to do that.
Yeah, I love that so much. You have a line that kind of stopped me. You said all leadership is personal.
All of it.
Most people really do treat their professional self and their personal self like two different people. When did you realize that split isn't necessarily a boundary, but it's a blind spot for people?
I tend to think everything starts with me. Before I became self-employed, I was taking on these jobs where I felt like I did a lot of code switching all day long. And what I realized in that space, the cognitive load of trying to perform was one thing, and then the work was another thing. But I noticed my work wasn't as good as it needed to be because I was always trying to be something else. And I think what happens is, in terms of that, all leadership is personal. Once I began to go, you know what? I am who I am, including all of the things that I think professional spaces would reject. I'm a Southern girl. Sometimes my accent is stronger than others. If we talk about colorism, I'm pretty brown. I came from a working class family. I started to look at all of the things that I thought might cause someone to reject me and the things that I also felt insecure about. And I was like, you know what? When I'm worried about all of this, I don't show up in those professional spaces well. And as a result of that, whether someone is oppressing me or not, I'm still carrying that. And I started to look at how do I develop the confidence that I need so that no matter where I show up, I feel like I not only have a right to be in that space, but I can be myself in that space. So essentially, I started working to integrate those parts of who I am. And then when I look at the substance of what I do a lot of reading, I take a lot of workshops. I'm like, you mean to tell me people can't see the connection between learning how to communicate effectively during conflict, how that works in their personal life? What? On the other hand, I also see some of my female clients in particular, they talk about this tap dancing, this avoidance of dealing with issues at home, that when they are at work, they deal with these kinds of issues in a very different way. And I'm like, that's why you're frustrated, because you're twiddling your thumbs trying to pretend because you don't want to upset your partner with respect to who you are. You don't want to come off as too clear, too aggressive, too this or too that. And again, that person you are at work, she's still in there. She's just afraid of the consequences of being who she is in this space. And it's the same thing, vice versa. When people blow up on their family members, I had a friend who had some anxiety issues. And one of the things I told her, I said, I notice you blow up on us as your friends and you have these episodes, but I know your boss. I used to work with her. That's actually how you became friends. I was like, you never lose it on her. And you lose it in environments where you're not worried about the consequences. And the same thing is true of leadership. We don't turn into two different people based on where we are. We change based upon our concerns about consequences.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And you're having hard conversations. You have built an entire body of work around the ones that people are avoiding. So I have a question. Like, what is the conversation that you see leaders? And I mean, we're talking smart, capable, accomplished leaders. What do you see them dodging the most, and what is it costing them?
I think the first and foremost, I would say this, fear. No matter what it is, a lot of times, no matter what the specific issue is, a lot of times it's boiled down to fear. having to manage their image, their reputation. And I'm not saying that some of that isn't important, but first and foremost, it starts with this fear that I am going to lose some sort of credibility based on how I show up in this particular circumstance. So I think that's the first part. Then the other part of it is not only looking at the fear, but what happens is they are so afraid of sharing what I refer to as a fatal flaw or saying something about themselves, then they just get stuck. In particular, there's a guy, he reached out and he's sharing his issue, and he has a woman on his team who he really needs to address some issues, but there are so many competing layers, and he allowed himself to be paralyzed by fear. So he's a man of color. It was a white woman on his team he was having some issues with, and he was so stuck around, okay, she's a woman. She's also a white woman. She's younger than I am. And I don't know how to communicate through this situation where I don't come out looking as if I'm antagonizing her or as if I'm incompetent in terms of managing people. I find that with a lot of the work that I do, it's variations of something that's making people feel terrified, something that's important to them is being threatened. And what happens when people feel unsafe, the part of the brain that works on strategy and a path forward, it's like lights out. They cannot function. All they think of is, oh my God, I am going to lose here. And that is literally the number one issue.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. You also say resentment is the tax you pay for giving people the impression that your sacrifice is free. And we didn't really get into that resentment issue, but I want to unpack that because I think a lot of people don't even realize that they're building all of this resentment until they're so buried in it. So for someone listening right now, what would you say would be the early signs? Like, what does it look like before you're going to explode?
Before you explode, you feel it. You felt it way before then. And where it starts is frankly, you're in a situation where you start to feel like this tax, even before you recognize that you're resenting, you're starting to do things on a regular basis that you really don't want to do, or they contradict something or undermine something that you want to do. So for instance, let's say it's something simple. Let's say you want to work on your health and you come up with this workout routine, you've got it all planned out and you're working on it. But there's this one particular thing that your mom, your kid, your spouse asks you to do, and you're always in a position where you have to subordinate what it is you were going to do for your health to take care of this thing. Over time, if we don't deal with the fact that doing this makes you drift away from the goal you have for yourself over here, that is the tax that you pay. Because what happens is you're like, my cholesterol is going up, I'm picking up weight. Frankly, I was using that to manage stress, whatever it is. And when I have to consistently not engage in that because of this other thing, rather than, hey, let's see how we can create a win-win. Let's see if this is something that I can't help you find the resources so that you can do for yourself. When people find themselves feeling stuck is where that resentment begins to build. And so I would say this, when you start to find that, you know what, I'm getting more and more aggravated every day or more and more aggravated every week. I'll give you a personal example. I had a girlfriend, and don't get me wrong, I think she's still a little angry with me. Because I work from home, she has an hour commute. We had gotten into this habit where every day she would call and she would, I call it, dump your trash in my yard to vent about some problems at work. And one day I said to her, I said, I love you, T. I do. I said, but every day, this is an hour conversation about everything that's wrong in your world. And as I don't have the good attention to give you on this, I said, I've gotten to the point where when I see your name in caller ID, I just get mad because I know it's an hour of dumping. It's little things like that. It's the persistence of things that kind of needle you and you feel trapped. And yes, did I take a risk with telling my friend that? Yes. Did it hurt her feelings? Yes. Has she changed her behavior and stopped calling me every day? Yes. And I think we have to, it's those simple things that we don't realize build up that deficit, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, I went through that same experience with my sister. It's like every time I pick up the phone, she's a victim. She's stuck in the past, all of these things. And I'm like, I finally, I try to be patient and give her space because we didn't talk for a really like 10 years and reconnected. And, I tried to give her that space, but there's a breaking point. And I'm like, I love you, but like, aren't you tired of being the victim? Like, aren't you tired of this? I'm exhausted. I see her calling and I'm like, oh my God, it would be exhausting. So I hurt her feelings. I pissed her off. I haven't heard from her. I think I got
I
a
get
happy
it.
birthday text. And I mean, people think, oh, that's your sister, that's your family. And I think people don't understand that it doesn't matter who it is in your life. If you're constantly talking to someone and you feel that drain every single time
Exactly.
you talk to them, that is your body signaling. Like, hey, this is not good for us. Like, we're not in the space. And it's the same thing. Like, I feel like, especially with growth and leadership, you run into people in your past and they try to hold you to who you were. And it's
Yes,
hard.
then. Yes.
It is so hard for people to understand. And it's one of those things like, look, I validate your feelings. I understand this was tough. Like, that's not who I am. If you want to chill with me here, like, you could be with who I am now in this space. But like, I can't just go back there. It's not real for me anymore. You heal
Oh,
that stuff,
absolutely.
you move on, and people really, really tend to struggle with that. And I think.
I think the way I think of that is if I am in a relationship with somebody and I'm dealing with that kind of thing, if the reason that I don't tell you that that is driving me nuts is because I'm afraid of your reaction, then we have a whole nother issue. And I think that's the other thing too. Sometimes we show up in relationships and we don't express our needs, not because we love that situation or even that we don't feel burdened. We are afraid of being abandoned by that person or losing that relationship. And I think fear-based relationships are the absolute worst because now I am in a relationship that, at least if I were at work, I'd be getting paid for this foolishness. But I'm in a relationship where I have to be something else to be in relationship with you. And at some point, if I'm constantly complaining about my connection with you, eventually that's going to show up in my interaction with you. So if I can't tell you about it, we either have to figure out a solution or at some point we're going to fall out anyway.
I very much agree with that. So I want to talk about your leadership drives because you literally get in the car, drive a car across the country to have the conversations in person. 24 states, okay? I want you guys to understand 24 states is what I read.
Indeed, indeed.
Chaplains, philanthropy executives, museum directors. So what is it about being in motion, like literally on the road, that changes what people are willing to say?
I will say by far, when I think about all of the things I've done professionally, I will say the leadership drives. It's not that I don't love my expertise up to this point, but it is the one thing that will probably take me a couple more years to get to every state, that it is just near and dear to my heart in a way that I can't even describe. But what I find that I love about the leadership drives, I've learned two things actually. There's some things once I develop rapport with people that people share with my Lena, and then there's some things that people share with podcast land. And I have in some instances, or actually in most instances, if someone has said something in their podcast interview that I think they said to my Lena, I'll send them the episode before I air it. I'm like, I want to draw your attention to this segment. Are you really okay with this? Because sometimes people have said things that were so vulnerable, so raw. And the reason that I love the podcast connecting with people first, I get to travel around the country and I get to see our country from a totally different perspective. When you fly over, it's different than popping into the convenience store and having conversations with people in, the Mississippi Delta. Those are two different things. So on one hand, I feel like I've developed a different kind of bond with just my fellow citizens. The other thing that I've seen, our country has a lot more poverty and a lot more struggle than I think many of us realize. And stereotypically, we think that poverty has a look. It does not. It's all sorts of people from all walks of life, and that has been stunning. But in terms of talking to people, I love the fact that when I talk to people, I can ask them two things. I try to find out what draws them or pushes them to lead. And then I want to know how they live their lives in a way where if we can identify some defining experiences that may have pushed them into the kind of leadership they're in, or if there are things that they are struggling with to have that alignment in their lives. I absolutely love people's stories. I mean, some of the things that people have said, like for instance, with the philanthropy executive, I'm not going to name the company he worked for, but let's just say I drove to Bentonville, Arkansas to interview him. And I asked him, I was like, what's the deal with you choosing to work in the foundation arm of this organization? And he talked about how he grew up in a relatively, I'm not going to say wealthy, wealthy family, but a solidly middle-class family farm in the Carolinas. And he said the one thing that he has known his entire life, no matter what risks he took professionally, and to many, in many ways, even personally, he knew that he was never going to be homeless or hungry. And that gave him a kind of freedom to experiment with his life. And he said, and so he loved it. First part of his career focused largely on housing. And he said, so what has often stuck with him is this idea that, you know, if we could give most people this the peace of mind to know, I can try things and I'm not going to be homeless or hungry. I mean, I might not have everything I want, but I know those two things are never going to be in my future. Just think about how much human capital we could free up, how much creativity people could express, how lives could be made differently. I mean, you're just like, wow, just thinking about that kind of thing. One of the things that I even talked to in terms of making space, I met a guy from Atlanta who runs one of Atlanta's the I don't know if it's the only cemetery in the city of Atlanta proper, but it's one of the oldest cemeteries. And he shared this heartbreaking story about he's a young man. His wife died, if not in childbirth, shortly after. And he talked about what it meant to manage his own guilt around self-care. You know, I have this baby, and how many women can relate to that? And he was like, I understand this baby is a baby. He said he even chose this one vacation spot he was going to after a podcast interview because it came with on-site childcare. He was like, I love my kid, but I need to get away from him. And I mean, just hearing the way that people work to make the pieces of their lives fit together. And I learned this, if I've learned nothing else, all of us are on a journey and we're creating the narratives of our lives. And it's a blessing for people to share parts of their narrative with me and allow me to ask them questions so as they put the pieces together, they have a bit more perspective.
Yeah, that's what I love about the show. I mean, they're not getting in a car and taking off, but like I'm still getting to meet the most incredible people and just getting to hear the stories. Like I've yet to have an episode where I'm gonna fall asleep of boredom. Okay. Yet to have that. So I think it's incredible. And you collect stories, that's what you do. And collecting them on the road, I see, you know, you say that becomes a part of how you find the courage to take the risks that you're asking other people to take. So I want to pause for a sec because I want to ask you, what risk are you still working up the courage to take right now?
What I'm trying to do, fingers crossed. So I'm going to work on my podcast for the next 12 to 18 months. And the reason I want to do that, I want to work on a few things behind the scenes. And then I want to actually pitch my podcast to a couple of foundations. What I want to do, I want to see if they will sponsor my podcast because I want to go around the country. And what I'd love to do is look at the people who they've funded, who they've supported. And because I'm trying to figure out how to make it a win-win and thinking about, okay, so if I could go to your grantees and tell the story of how your support has enabled them to have an impact on a particular cause or a particular community, it could work. So that's my most immediate risk that I'm working on. So I'm like, okay, at the end of the day, I want to do this and I'm going to see if I can work on that part of my business and my life because where I also think about is in terms of where our economy is right now. I'm like, I need to manage costs. I need to do this. And my grandmother says one thing if she says nothing else, nothing beats a failure but a try. So on one hand, looking at those kinds of professional risks, personally, I've been in the Northeast 20 years now. I think I want to relocate. I don't know where I'm going, but I've already given notice that I'm not renewing my lease on my apartment. So in September, I'm going somewhere. I've still got to work that out. But I notice that in terms of just the risk in my life, I have developed these two personal values as kind of like my North Stars. One is integrity and the other one is faith. And the faith piece for me is I'm going to do my best, and I'm going to trust that God, the universe, whatever you refer to the higher power as, is going to fill in the gaps. And so, with respect to my life, those two things undergird me, and I'm just going to go for it. I mean, I will not be one of those people on my deathbed who regrets not trying to live the life they wanted to live.
Right. I love that so much. And part of something too that I can align with you on is that you don't argue with people who are willing to fail themselves. Like, if you're going to argue for your limitations, like, we're done. That's a boundary that a lot of coaches don't have. And I know the side of that because I, drew some lines in the business. Like, if we can't build a foundation, and I know that if you're not biblically building this up, I can't help you. Like, if I can't work through the guidebook of life to help you, like, I can't help you. Like, it's the only thing I know. That really pissed people off. I mean,
You
like,
know, I'm with you. One of the things I've even given some thought to on the professional end of my business, because I can totally do this when I'm dealing with individuals. I've even thought about creating a new requirement for organizations who force people to go to coaching.
yeah.
I'm like, do you know how fruitless that is in many
Wow.
instances? You spend the first five or six sessions getting them past being ticked off that they're even there. And if you are not willing to try, it's kind of like I heard this guy. I shouldn't refer to him this guy. It feels a little disrespectful. One of my favorite TV ministers, TD Jakes, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He talked about how he will not do marriage counseling if he doesn't feel the same amount of commitment from both people. He was like, if one of you is all in and the other one's on the fence, he was like, call me back when both of y'all are all in. You might have problems, but it is not until we have that agreement, that we are going to make this move forward that we can fix the problems. And I feel that way with my clients. If you have an issue and you're not sure you want to work on it, if you want to wallow, you know what? I tell people, you are the locomotive, I am the steam. I will help you figure this out. But if you want to park, I will let you.
Yeah,
I will let you.
absolutely. I love that. Well, we are almost time's up here. So I want you to tell people about your show, where they can find you, all the things. Give everyone all the details. I do have your website posted in the show notes so they can go straight there. So tell us where we can find you, where we can hear you.
There are two easy ways. The easiest way is my name, mylenasutton.com. If you go to my website, literally you can find a link to both sides of my business, the podcast, there's a contact page. I even added some new doohickey, if you will, earlier this week, where it pulls together all three of my YouTube channels in one spot. So with respect to that, if you go to mylenasutton.com, you can absolutely find everything that you need. And if you look at the last icon on the menu, it's called invitations. And within there, I have a couple of things that I think people actually love. One is called Progress Pals. You complete the form, and what you do, you share with me a goal you're working on, and I will text you every week. Hey, you said you were going to work on turning cartwheels or whatever it is you're going to do. I want to know, are you doing it? Very simple. And it's literally just texting. It's completely free. And then for people who are within organizations, I've created this new thing called the Vista Seek Problem Solvers Group, where you join a group and you basically have a free group to be a part of, where we help you workshop the challenges you're having with respect to alignment on your team.
That is incredible. That's incredible.
So definitely check it out.
Yeah, you guys make sure you get resourced. Mylena, I have to tell you what makes you special. And please actually receive this. You are not a coach who makes people feel good about where they are. You are a coach who loves people enough to tell them the truth about where they're going if they stay there. And that is a rare gift than most anything else I could think of, because it's so much easier to validate than it is to challenge. And it's so much easier to hold space than it is to hold a mirror. And you hold
Indeed.
a mirror. And I love that. I love that. You don't look away when people flinch. And the fact that you have built the Pink Boxes Club and the Voltage V, so that you go to work every day for organizations and for women in the second half of their lives, that tells me everything about who you are. You're not afraid of complexity. You're not afraid of the conversation that nobody wants to start. And you do this while you're doing incredible things, driving across America, collecting stories, cuddling babies, which I'm jealous of that. I feel like I need to put that in my agenda somehow. And I mean, you're sitting with people who are dying, and it's because you understand that leadership and service and living a
They
full
go together.
life not separate things. They're the same thing. Thank you so much for being someone who refuses to let people stay comfortable in their blind spots. I am passionate about that. It's why I love having people on the show to make it relatable for everybody to understand that your potential is one decision away. That's
Thank
it.
you.
The kind of love is the hard kind. The world needs more of it. You guys listening, this show is for you, not the version of you that has it together, not the version of you that's already done the work. Okay? The version of you that is right here, right now, in the middle of a life that might look fine from the outside, but feels like it's missing something you can't quite name. I'm gonna say it on every show. Your mess is your message. I know that I say that. We say it because it's true every single time. Whatever you've been through, whatever you're still in, whatever you keep thinking you need to resolve before you can step into the thing you know you're supposed to be doing, that's not a delay. That's the material. Go find Mylena, look up her, get resourced with everything she's offering. And you, if you're a leader who is done managing dysfunction without addressing it, please call her. If you're a woman standing on the right side of 40 wondering whose prescription you've been filling, okay, call her. The link is in the show notes and come back here. Make sure you're subscribed. Make sure you share this episode because someone needs to know who Mylena is. And through me, through you, that's how they're going to find her. Okay. So you're kind of selfish if you don't share the show, you guys. I'm not going to lie. And I'll be here. I'll be back for one reason only, and that's to pull the real stories out into the light so the person that needs to hear them can finally stop feeling alone in theirs. Okay. Mylena, thanks again so much. And you guys, I'll see you in the arena.
Thank you.